Let's call the meeting to order. Roll call, please. Brenda Arnold. Sally Channing.
She's not here. She likes to work.
Michael Howe.
Here.
Jean Matthews.
Here.
Michael Owens.
Here.
Gary Dunmire.
Bogdan Pierkowski.
Neil.
Olga Prieto.
Here.
Bob Saban is excused. Mark Stivers.
Here.
Heather Trebeau.
Here.
And Mike Regetti.
Here.
We have a call, Madam Chair.
Great, thank you. On the regular items, item B, we do have a request to, for the agenda, to move items 2C and 2D up before action item 2A. Can we get a motion to approve the agenda with the modifications? So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, item C, a motion to approve the minutes from June 8, 2017.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, Jean and Michael. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, item C, D, comments from the chair. Again, talk about West Palm Beach, because I don't know what's going on over there. We are working on Fern Street right now. It's under construction. It's anticipated to be finished with construction by late fall. That's something that we actually got a grant through the MPO with. So they actually built out a lot of the bioswales on Fern Street, which is exciting. We're going to go check them out on Friday and see their progress. Lake Avenue, we brought that up a while ago. We're actually looking to do protected bike lanes on Lake Avenue. And if anybody has looked at them, we're looking at doing zebras there, which are like, it's a vertical separation, but you know, short by inches. And they're long, oblong pieces that are in there. And so it's something that hasn't been done in the area before. And it's really exciting. It's something that's being done all over in Europe right now. But it provides a little protection in case the wheel of somebody comes over.
So it's lifted?
It's lifted. It's a rubber oval, like a piece of rubber that is bolted down into the ground. And then you do them like every, you know, so many feet across. But then drainage can still come through and bikes can still cross through. But if a car was to move over, it would hit them and then bounce back off of it. So that's the idea behind them. And that's on Lake Avenue.
Are they similar to the armadillo?
Yes, they are the armadillo. That's another project that's moving forward that's pretty exciting. And we have two schools down in that area, so we're really looking to have a nice protected bike lane down there. The bicycle master plan is under conceptual review. We have a meeting this afternoon with some stakeholders. It's really just going to be hot off the press, so I don't have too much to say about it, but we're excited about that moving forward. And we had our Okeechobee corridor workshops last month, and they were a huge success. We had over 200 people in there, and now we're meeting with FDOT separately to kind of discuss some of the outcomes of that and kind of see where they're at with all of those outcomes and kind of working together as we move forward. Okay. So those are kind of what's going on with us. So if anybody has any questions, other than Jean.
Just a quick comment. You talked a few months ago about the art project the students at the school did.
Yes.
I just want to say I've been through it several times now, and it really looks great. And it really inspired us in Delray to look at the opportunity of using creative road paints. And the one thing we're looking at now is to define the neighborhood. You know, come up with a creative way to say, hey, welcome to the northeast, southeast neighborhood. So your idea is carrying on.
Thank you.
It's really well done.
Thank you. It's been a really interesting experience, and I think that we could also do like a lesson learned from that, because that has moving forward. There was some hiccups in it, but I think that what came out of it was beautiful, and yep. The people love it that are in that area, and the students love it too. Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. Okay. Item C. We'll go to Fran for the bicycle pedestrian coordinator's report.
Sure. Good morning and happy July, everyone. So I have a few comments on my liaison report, and I'll go through those. So first, I wanted to announce that Palm Beach County has a new county engineer as of June 8th. The county has announced the selection of David Ricks. He's coming to us from Norfolk, Virginia. He also has some previous experience in Fulton County, Georgia, and in Ohio. He will be replacing George Webb, our current engineer, who retires on August 31st. Just want to give you everyone a heads up. There's a bicycle helmet fitting training on July 25th. It'll be in Green Acres, and the address, of course, is on your liaison report. We do have a few US 1 multimodal corridor studies coming up. Just letting everyone know, in July we'll have the Lake Worth workshop on the 22nd, followed by the charrettes on the 24th through the 26th. There are a few other notes and comments, and I'll let you peruse those on your own. One thing I do want to bring your attention to is the correspondence from our county engineer. You'll find that under the report as well. Per our last conversation, our last meeting here, we had discussion about the process that the county takes in its resurfacing of roads. As you know, the county has laid out the roads that it wants to resurface over the next several years, and conversation ensued internally here about encouraging local municipalities to provide feedback, and then also providing bicycle and enhanced pedestrian facilities where possible during these projects. So the correspondence that you see before you is the response that we received from our county engineer. And I'll allow you time to kind of tour that on your own. And my final announcement this morning is that it is a bittersweet announcement for me. I'd like to announce that this is my last meeting with the VTPAC. I'm moving further south to Miami, and I'll be working with Renaissance Planning Group. So hopefully I'll be able to see you in another capacity. It's been great learning from you guys. I really have enjoyed sitting in these meetings and kind of understanding your perspectives. And I do have a final presentation at the end of the meeting for anyone who wants to stick around for 2 to 3 minutes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Does anyone have any comments?
I don't know. It's a mixed letter. It says staff does not intend to change our current process for resurfacing, and the program's in limited staff time. And then it goes on to say that they keep adding bike lanes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is kind of a mixed bag as well, and I think it's up to the committee if you would like to have further explanation, I guess, so to speak, a presentation from the county engineer or representative. So, you know, that's totally within your right.
Yeah, I would love to have a presentation on how they decide which roads to resurface, why, and how they determine whether they're going to decrease the width of the lanes and provide additional shoulders or bike lanes.
Or even like when they're deciding, when they you know, they're making it public, and that's wonderful. Maybe once that goes out, it would be nice to have a presentation to what projects are coming up so that we can kind of have a heads up on the projects.
Yes. I move that we invite the county engineer to do a presentation on road resurfacing projects.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, any general public comments? Are any comments on any of the agenda items? Any cards? No public comment? Okay, let's go to item number 2, action items, and we're going to skip to 2C. This is a motion to recommend approval of an amendment to the 2017-18 Unified Work Program, and we have been presented.
Yeah, good morning everyone. My name is Nick Duren. I'm the director for the Palm Beach MPO.
And I appreciate your accommodation to my schedule this morning so that we can do these two agenda items. I don't think they're going to take a lot of time. The first one's more of a housekeeping item. The second item is definitely an important item, and I'd love to hear your discussion and feedback on it. But again, appreciate your flexibility. Before I kick it off, though, I do have one clarification on the previous action taken by the committee. Could you help me out with, because Fran's last day is tomorrow, and implementing your request is going to fall on the rest of our team. Help me out with exactly what kind of a presentation you're looking for so that we can convey the request accurately.
I think a presentation on which roads or how the selection is made for resurfacing projects, and in the design, what considerations are given for bike lanes or wider shoulders, and why sometimes they're put in and sometimes they're not.
Okay, so just as part of the committee's awareness, the selection of projects has already occurred.
Right.
So I don't know that they're looking for input on where they're going to be spending the infrastructure surtax money. The plan has been presented to the county commissioners and adopted as a schedule with dollar amounts and years associated with it. So is the committee asking to have an opportunity to review that schedule and make suggested changes to it?
I don't.
I'm trying to figure out why do you want to know which ones they're going to do? They provided you a link to the in the letter that says these are the projects we're going to do and these are the years we're going
to
do them.
I guess cut the chase. Why do they sometimes put in bike lanes and sometimes they don't?
Okay. So how do you decide when to include bike lanes in the resurfacing project?
And our original framework for this was to help coordinate the county with the municipalities and kind of see, or other agencies to see when we can coordinate to, if they were needing a little bit more to go to that next level, that could happen. And so if we weren't sure what was happening or why the decisions were made, then it makes it a little bit harder for that coordination to take place, or if it's too far down the road.
Okay, well, I want to make sure everyone understands the sort of revolutionary aspect of the infrastructure surtax is that for the first time, we actually have a planned list of maintenance projects and a time frame that they will be implemented on. So that's great. I mean, I think we should celebrate that document exists, because in the past we've asked the county, hey, similar to the DOT's approach to resurfacing, could you tell us 3 or 4 years in advance where you're going to be doing work so that we can work together on what those projects should look like? And the response has always been it's an annual budget request. We don't ever know where we're going to do work until the county commission says yes or no. We can't do that. So now we actually have a plan to work with. So you have information, at least on the collaboration side. It's, you know, that PDF, and I'll make a side note, if any of the committee members are interested in that as an Excel spreadsheet instead of a PDF, so that you can sort of filter and modify it, just send Alexa an email and we'll get you a copy of that. Or maybe we can just have you send that out to the whole committee, because I think that it's nice to interact with information in a usable format instead of that 11x17 PDF. So your question is where, and I just want to restate it to make sure I'm capturing it, how do they make the call as to when to include bike lanes or not? And then Heather, you sort of suggested you wanted an opportunity for collaboration as well.
Yes.
My suggestion to you is that you have the schedule, look at it, and reach out to them on projects in your area that are coming up in the next few years. But we can make that part of the request too. How do you identify when to put bike lanes on a project or not? And how can local partners provide useful input to you? And potentially even, are we going to go as far as saying additional funding to supplement projects that are upcoming?
If possible.
So giving that open door to that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I think I've got it. Thank you for that clarification. Now let me get to this. Okay, so Unified Planning Work Program is the MPO's budget. It tells us what to do, and it tells us how much money we get from the federal government to accomplish those tasks. We have a 2-year budget, and and set of tasks that we're operating under right now. It covers fiscal year 17 and 18. We're concluding fiscal year 17. It's on a state fiscal year, so that finished up June 30th. And we're now in fiscal year 18 of our two-year budget document. We're essentially doing three changes to the document as housekeeping items, and I've just summarized them here. First, we have six tasks in each of our fiscal years, and we're supposed to spend money consistent with that document. And they were estimates when we put it together, and we're moving money around from one task to another, not changing the overall total and not changing any of the tasks that we're going to get done, but just moving the money around between the tasks to balance and be consistent with how we've actually spent our time. So that's essentially a housekeeping item to move the money to align with our expenditures. Second one is we are kicking off the update to the regional long-range plan. That's a shared investment of all three of our Southeast Florida MPOs, Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach. All three of us contribute dollars to that project. The estimated budget is $900,000. Each of us will contribute $100,000 per year for the three-year period that contract is expected to be in place. So we're going to give our $100,000 to the Broward MPO in fiscal year 18. Miami is giving their $100,000 to Broward MPO. Broward is the lead this cycle. Last cycle it was Miami-Dade, and then when we do the next major update in five more years, then Palm Beach MPO will be in the lead of that. So that's the second request. And then the third is we need to show the expenditure of dollars or the requested reimbursement for dollars in the fiscal year when we get the invoices. We have contracts with consultants to provide service to us, and we didn't have as many invoices in fiscal year 17 as we expected. So we're expecting to see more bills come in fiscal year 18. Again, we're not increasing the total dollar amount in those contracts. We're just saying, hey, we got to show the dollars in fiscal year 18 because that's when we're going to expect to get billed for the services. So those are the three updates. I'd be happy to answer any detailed questions. Otherwise, we're looking for a recommendation.
Any questions tonight? No? Does anyone like to make a motion?
So moved.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye. We have to state the motion. Motion to adopt the amended.
Thank you.
Yeah, to recommend approval of the amended UPW. That's fine. Yeah, we got it. Okay, jumping right into the strategic plan. The strategic plan for the MPO is our guiding document. It was established by the governing board last fall, I think August, September time frame. It tells us what to accomplish, where to focus our staff, time, energy, and effort. It's really a supporting document and a focusing document to that budget that we just talked our way through. It says get these particular things done that are above and beyond the minimum requirements for an MPO. So what do we as a community want to work on most? What do we want to see happen? And how do we want to make sure that we're being the best version of an MPO that we can be? We adopted an annual report card last year, our annual plan, and we're showing you in this backup material how we did on the various objectives that the board told us to accomplish this past year. And then we're going to talk through some suggested modifications that we'd like to present to the MPO board next week for their approval in giving us updated direction for the coming year. I do want to mention we had a five-member governing board subcommittee meet with our staff and look at this in a little bit of detail, and a lot of the recommendations in the backup are based on the discussion that we had with that MPO governing board subcommittee. Okay, so highlights on how we've done. I think that shout out to Annie. That's her right here. Newly recommended for service on the BT PAC member for Boca Raton. One of the things that we've done very well and successfully is to engage both our elected officials and our staff in the planning process to really see the energy and the potential impact in our communities for doing good projects. And I love the discussion, even with your chair's report, on the way that you guys are encouraging one another to make your communities the best possible versions of themselves. I think that's wonderful. We've seen a lot of increase in public involvement. We're doing a lot more outreach, social media, our website's better, and then the events that we have invested in our time and energy in, we've seen a lot of people show up and really engage, provide input to us. Just on a matter of course, we're focusing on implementing our long-range plan. We're leading corridor studies consistent with the objective in our strategic plan. We're engaged in prioritizing the money and trying to help our committees and our board really understand the authority that they have to direct dollars to projects. We're working on improving the scope of work to be accomplished by individual project, much like the conversation about the surtax dollars. And we're providing training to our partner agencies, whether it's Complete Streets training, whether it is how to submit applications for federal funding through the MPO, how to make those local initiative transportation alternatives grants. We're engaged in all of those types of things. And those are things we were told to do, and I think we've done them pretty well this year. Ongoing opportunities are areas where we haven't quite gotten there yet. We need to improve our board meeting space. If any of you have ever been to one of our governing board meetings, the public area is pretty small and it's tight, and with the increased public involvement, we're starting to feel the strain. We're working on the process to rebrand the MPO. We've actually taken several steps forward with our governing board, gotten some feedback and input on that, and we expect to have some draft alternatives for the way the MPO can be branded in the next few months. We are continuing to encourage our local partners to submit applications to the MPO for funding. The local initiatives, transportation alternatives, you'll talk more about that in the priority list. We didn't have that many applications. It's a remarkable scenario that we're in, where the gas taxes that we are collecting from our residents, we are now making available to our local governments to do projects of their selection, and we're having a hard time getting people to submit. So we want those applications to come in. We want to make sure that we're using the dollars on the best possible projects for our communities. And then just as a status report, we are continuing to work on finishing our Complete Streets guidelines, as well as advancing the mobility fee conversation. I think Fran may have mentioned some discussions upcoming next week on the mobility fee conversation. I don't know, was that part of your report? No. So let me make that note. Just as a side note, the County Commission on Tuesday is going to be conducting a workshop to talk about road impact fees, among other topics, but one of their primary topics is to discuss, without acting on any changes, the way they currently administer their road impact fees and what alternatives might be available to them for a countywide system towards moving towards a mobility fee that would allow for multimodal uses. We're also having a presentation at the MPO Governing Board next Thursday. The county staff has been asked to make a presentation of how they currently administer the road impact fee system so that our governing board members really start to get a sense of what is the way the world works, so that we can have meaningful conversations about change. So that's ongoing, and we're excited to see that conversation progress. So we're getting into now suggested modifications, and we have several on three slides, and I'm just going to run through them briefly. First, we want to provide more training opportunities to our governing board. One-day opportunities for them to come out, learn what they've been assigned. Some of our, especially municipal officials, get assigned to the MPO by their mayor or their chair, and then they show up and say, well, what is an MPO? So we want to make sure that they understand their role and authority as an MPO governing board member. We also want to continue our Complete Streets discussion. How can we implement good projects? How can we creatively provide for safe facilities for all users every time we're doing a project? We're going to focus attention, too, on selecting alternative meeting space and using that for our governing board. We've been asked in our certification review to update our limited English proficiency plan so that we can engage in the members of our communities for whom English is not their primary language, and make sure that their input is considered when we put together our projects. And then I also want to make this committee aware that PalmTran is undergoing a route performance maximization analysis, which is their term for, let's look at every route in our system, understand which ones are really busy and well-performing and we should invest more money in better service for, and which ones are maybe not performing very well. They don't even have enough riders to justify the cost of providing those services. Should we reallocate the dollars potentially to make the transit system operate more efficiently? We want to support them. One of the potential outcomes of that is that they will identify a handful, 5, 6, 7 corridors for investment in premium transit service and the associated multimodal improvements at those stops. We want to support them in that effort, and we want to suggest that the MPO's role should be to make sure that once they identify those corridors, we can lead in the study of what do the non-motorized infrastructure improvements need to be to make those corridors the best, the most attractive that they can be. In addition to that, we are suggesting, yes, please do.
What's the timeline on that?
It keeps moving, and okay. We were supposed to have an update on Tuesday. And
you won't be held.
Yeah. So their intent is to get that conversation happening now. They've got the initial consultant, phase one consultant, under contract and working on it. It's the Jarrett Walker project that Pong Chan has selected as their consultant. I want to say they hope to have, initially they said it was going to be November of this year, have a discussion at the county commission level about what are the priorities for transit, how do we want to invest the dollars, give so that the board can give the consultant and the staff some direction on where to go, and then make some recommended changes in 2018. So it'd be early 2018, maybe mid-2018, when they get those recommendations to the county,
okay,
and then try to act on a plan.
Okay.
So it would be consistent with our fiscal year time frame. It would be like from now to July of 2018, we would expect to be walking hand-in-hand with them on that process.
Thank you.
We're also suggesting that instead of supporting other people's applications for things like Tiger, Fastlane, and SunTrail grant applications, which we will continue to do, but it's maybe not as much of a strategic objective, we want to focus our attention on what are the things that we care about, that we are trying to accomplish, the performance measures and targets, and more specifically, how much money do we have to spend to reach those targets? For example, if one of our long-range plan objectives is let's go from 20 miles of buffered bike lane in Palm Beach County to 100 miles of buffered bike lanes in Palm Beach County. So if we want to add 80 miles of buffered bike lanes, how much money do we have to spend on an annual basis to accommodate that objective, to make that actually occur? We're trying to connect the dollars to the desires and then use those connections to make sure on an annual basis that we're funding projects that get us to those objectives. We're trying to add meaning to our long-range plan objectives and our targets. We still like the idea of facilitating pop-up projects. I think West Palm has done several, and we want to be a supporter and a promoter of those and make those connections. But what we've learned is the MPO doesn't really have dollars to help local governments do that. Our dollars are for permanent infrastructure, not temporary project installments. And so our role is really a support role, not a lead role in this. And so we're saying, let's take it out of our plan and let's continue to be the helpful support agency, but not commit ourselves to leading a certain number of projects. And then we're also suggesting, as you guys have already talked about, that we want to focus the innovative strategies into already planned and funded projects, not just in the stuff that's in the TIP, but also adding a focus on the infrastructure surtax and making sure that 10-year funding program has the maximum impact it can on our communities. On the collaborate with partners, we have a couple of important suggestions. First is, last year we did two workshops, one in the Vista Center for Local Initiatives and Transportation Alternatives, one in the Glades. The Glades area wasn't very well attended, and in fact, we didn't have as many people as we had hoped, even in the one that we conducted here at our office, so we're suggesting, why don't we do the workshop, tell people how to submit applications, show them how to walk through the process, and record it and post it to our website. So then when you or your team members are going back to your office and saying, well, what did they say about that? Or how could we? Then you can just pull up the link and kind of refresh your memory or assign someone the responsibility of, hey, fill out the application, watch this video, make sure you do it right. And that'll hopefully help all of our staffs understand how to put together good projects. We are also, instead of suggesting that we want to have twice the applications submitted to us as the funding allows, it's still a desire of mine because I think that's a great objective, but it's not an objective that the MPO staff can control. We can try to help you guys submit good applications, but at the end of the day, it's you and your councils and your commissions that need to support those. So what we're suggesting instead is that our staff will work on the application process by subjecting ourselves to it and coming up with applications for you to submit. So we're actually doing some of the legwork, some of the planning, and coming up with ideas and understanding how difficult the process is, because I know we've had some people complain about how challenging it is to submit good projects. So we're going to actually assign all of our planners to come up with at least one, maybe two projects, and put them together and share them with the local governments where that would be involved in getting those projects to happen in order to give you more ammunition to make those programs successful.
You know, I think that's really great because there are some municipalities that are highly skilled and some that are not.
Yes, and I think we're going to focus our attention on places where maybe the planning staff isn't as robust and they haven't seen as many applications be submitted. to sort of supplement their technical skills. Yeah, that's a great observation. We're going to continue to facilitate this road impact fee discussion, and the desired outcome, we're saying, give us a little bit more time, but we want the MPO board to approve a preferred alternative and say, as a community, we want to go this way, whether that's a countywide mobility fee system or whether it's a road fee system in some places and a municipal system in other places. We want the governing board to wrap their head around the options and then say, let's go here. And then lastly, we've been asked by our federal partners to assist any of our local governments in understanding what an ADA transition plan is, to ensure that they have that document in place so that when we try to do a federal aid project in a city, and the federal government says, do you have an ADA transition plan? They will all be able to say yes. So that's kind of the broad overview of our suggested updates. That's not the whole strategic plan. The rest of it is staying as is. But I wanted to highlight those, and then any discussion you have or feedback, we'd be appreciative of. Otherwise, we are looking for a recommendation. Mark?
Just a question. And Sip, you're talking about providing the suggested support. I totally like that. I like the idea. Is there any thought from the MPO about moving up the timeline so it's not a 4-year, 5-year gap from the time you apply to the funds are available, maybe shortening that over time?
There's been a lot of requests for that. And then I'll share that even on the 3-year TAP program, what we have observed is that more often than not, the applicants are lagging in their delivery of a project in the 3rd year. So, you know, the elected officials want things to happen fast. They want it to, hey, I want to submit and I want to see it happen in my term. And the staff says, well, which of our priorities do you want me to not do so that I can make that happen? And then we work together to try to make sure the projects happen, and then we end up knocking on doors and calling people and sending emails saying, hey, remember it's fiscal year 17 that your funding was available and you still haven't spent a dollar, and we're done with fiscal year 17. So I'm looking for a solution. I don't know how to make it happen faster, but ultimately we need detailed design plans and we need construction contractors, and it's a more competitive environment now that the county is spending in the cities all that money on infrastructure projects, and so everyone's busy.
So
if you have a good suggestion on how to accelerate, I'm all ears, because I know that our board members want it. I just haven't quite figured out how to make it happen.
Well, I'm looking at 6A and 6B, and you guys are a fantastic resource for municipalities to help out. Could it be in your training programs, you say, not only here is a good project, but here's how to get a good project ready for construction. So it's not just helping us pick the projects, but really truly explaining, okay, here's the timeline. If you want this done in 2 years, here's what needs to be done, and maybe having that training, and maybe the training is not just for the staff providing it, maybe doing it for like an elected officials training day, saying, hey, here's how the process works. If you want this done faster, you know, the old shovel ready idea is get your projects ready. So maybe it's a training thing that can help us get in line more. You know, I think it's a partnership, it's not all on you guys.
Okay.
Both sides.
Okay. That's good feedback.
You know, with the shift of a new county engineer, engineering kind of didn't want to do these transportation projects, you know, like Irm was running into, and we thought about doing some projects in the parks. Is there any way to get the county more on board to do these LAP projects?
Well, so Fran mentioned that David Ricks is actually, and I should clarify, he's starting on Monday. So Monday, I believe, is his first day on the job. A meet and greet is in the books, and so we're going to be talking and trying to make sure that we're partnering well.
Okay, good.
Internal department head meetings are helpful for that kind of collaboration. So you guys make sure Eric is reaching out to David and saying, hey, it would be great if you were a supportive partner in these kind of initiatives. Other than that, it's the complete streets conversations that we're trying to have with our elected officials, making sure that the governing board members are fully engaged and expecting their staffs to provide outcomes. So then we we've got county commissioners saying, hey, we keep hearing about this stuff. When are we going to be doing it here? And that those kind of questions tend to get county administrators and county engineers to move forward.
That's great. Any other questions? Okay. Would someone like to make a motion to adopt the strategic plan, right? Or,
to recommend approval.
Recommend approval,
updates to the strategic plan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The unified planning.
Oh, we did that one already.
Oh, sorry, I'm sorry.
So I'll make a motion to recommend approval of the updates to the Palm Beach MPO 5-year strategic plan.
Thank you.
Gotcha.
Thank you. And a second?
Second.
Okay, and all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, all opposed? Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Some of your changes are really great. I like how you're aligning really what we want to do with what the funds are available. That's, you know, that direct progress line is a little bit less detailed, but more of in line of kind of getting where we need to go. Thank you.
We're trying. And if you haven't met Kevin Fisher yet, he's our guy for the long range plan and leading that effort, connecting our performance measures with the spending of dollars. So make sure that you get to know him.
Hey, Nick, I just had a question as a follow-up from our last meeting where we recommended the adoption of the fiscal year 18 to 22 TIF with the acceptance of the project, which was the Southeast Rail Extension. Because nobody in the room at the time had any idea what that was, and you were going to try to get some information. Were you able to identify anything about that?
We did, and I will make sure, Lex, maybe if you could make sure that the updated location of that project is transmitted to the committee.
Okay.
The way that it was shown in the map was not accurate.
Okay.
It's in the Glades, the lower Lake Okeechobee area, but it's not exactly where we had shown it. Getting that out of getting the right person involved to get that to you was interesting. But we will share that information. There was a conversation about that project at the MPO board level, and they opted to let it go forward. Understanding your input and wanting clarity, and we will share that with you as soon as I can.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks again.
I think there's some questions about the history of that project as well, and I asked Alex to provide some.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess some history and some notes that reached out to our rail office. If you want to hear?
Yeah, let's hear.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's like 3 pages, so. Really reached out to the rail office in OMD they work for. They reached out to South Florida Central Express and then the FDOT rail office in Tallahassee. So the South Central Florida Express Inc. SCFE proposes to construct a new 40-mile-per-hour rail main line skirting the southern portion of South Bay, crossing US 27, the North New River Canal, Schooner Road, County Road 27, County Road 880 and the Hillsborough Canal. It's connecting back into the SCFE line east of South Bay. The proposed track will connect the SCFE railroad line on the west side of South Bay with the U.S. Sugar Line on the east side of Belleglade. And a separate line will run south, roughly parallel and east of Duda Road, crossing the Boyles Canal. As understood, the project will continue to be funded through a grant from the state of Florida over two additional phases, with FDOT funded work to be completed by December 31st, 2019. And SCFE approached FDOT to build a new rail spur that would cross US 27 at a grade located approximately 7 miles south of South Bay in Palm Beach County. The proposed spur would have 12 train crossings at 2-hour intervals. The trains will have about 80 to 100 carloads and about a speed of 40 miles per hour. The crossings will occur during the harvest season, October 1st through April 30th of each year. Funding will be provided by U.S. Sugar, 90% of pay, and FDOT will cover the 10%. And U.S. Sugar will be responsible for 100% of maintenance. The project will start in early 2016, and bidding will start in July 2017, with construction start scheduled for September 2017. And overall, the project consists of 17 miles of new track, and it'll start 1.25 miles west of 27 and runs east approximately 10 miles to the east of US 27 with spurs heading north and one heading south. And the project is needed to reduce truck traffic in the South Bay area. And there's some like stats here I could read a couple off, and if you want a copy to read more about France, that she would make some for you, there's a little map. Just some quick public safety. It says in South Bay, school buses using railroad grade crossings will be reduced from 6 per day to 0, with 12 fewer trains per day and 220 days of harvest. That equals 2,640 trains per year, reducing the potential number of incidents from 15,840 a year to 0. And for auto and truck traffic, the AADT of 14,100 vehicles per day on US 27, and with 2,600 fewer trains per year, there will be 37,224,000 fewer potential number of incidents at the US 27 grade crossing in South Bay. So really improve safety and plus improve economic development in the area to potentially stimulate the growth in Western Palm Beach County. We'll convert a portion of the 400-600 annual truckloads of sugar from major production facility currently moving on South Florida highway systems. And allows FCC to move volumes of commercial traffic on the K branch without conflict with cane traffic. And also some of the statute are the same, just mentioned the different areas. And it moves existing truck traffic operating on public roads to private farm roads. And the current operation is 44,000 truck trips per season, which is 200 trips per day and 220 days of harvest. If rail transport of cane was not an option, the future operation would consist of 300,000 truck trips per season, which is 1,400 per day, and trucks operating 24 hours a day, and also lower noise and traffic impacts for homes, residents, motorists, and businesses in the area. There's a little map of the highlight of the rail of what area is sort of going through in yellow. And you can visit a friend, and she can make copies if you are interested.
Thank you. Could you actually scan it and send it to us?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Nick. At the end of that, any more questions at all? No? Okay. So then we're going to go back to action item 2A, a motion to recommend adoption of the annual list of priority projects. And this will be presented by Kevin Fisher.
Good morning.
Those of you that have been on the committee for a while, you know this is an annual process, and it's named Annual List of Priority Projects. And this calendar will look familiar to you. It was similar in the TIP presentation last month. So last month, the fiscal year 18 through 22 TIP was adopted, and here we are already starting to think about the next year's 19 through 23 TIP. So this year, the priority list is coming to you a little earlier. Last year it was in September. The Florida legislature is operating under an expedited schedule this year, hence the two-month pulling forward of the due date for this. So the purpose of the priority list is to identify those priority projects that we'd like incorporated into DOT's work program, which will then feed into next year's 19 through 23 TIP. So I just wanted to kind of lay out a little overview of how everything's connected with the TIP, the priority list, the work program. We put together a list of what we thought could be some frequently asked questions. You'll notice in the backup the projects are divided into four different lists, and the primary reason for that is different funding sources. So you'll have the MPO major projects, which are those projects that are in the adopted long-range transportation plan, cost feasible plan. You have the transportation alternatives projects and the local initiatives, which are submitted annually by local governments. And then last year, a fourth list was added, which is the SunTrail program. You'll remember earlier this year, there were applicant presentations. The transportation alternative projects that were submitted were presented to this committee for recommendation and ranking. Projects are ranked based on the goals, objectives, and values included in the adopted long-range transportation plan. You'll notice in the tables, the far right column has funding needed. So that purpose of that column is if there's any projects where there's still a gap in funding that would be needed to realize that project, we identify that value so we know what is still needed for funding purposes. And then lastly, if project is on a list, is funding guaranteed? No, but typically the projects on the list do come to fruition, but the priority list is guidance to DOT for the development of their next work program. to run through the different components of the priority list. So the first one in your backup is the MPO major projects. Like I mentioned, those are projects that are identified in the cost feasible plan of the LRTP. This year, the project we're proposing to add to the list for major projects is the Okeechobee Boulevard Multimodal Corridor Study, which would also include a component along State Road 7 to make the connection to the mall at Wellington Green. So this would be similar to the process that the US 1 Multimodal Study is undergoing now, whether it be the planning study. It would then identify capital improvements and enhanced transit services as part of that study. And why did we pick that project? So the process that we went through is we looked at all of the projects identified in the cost feasible plan under the MPO major project section. And then we went project by project and first identified those projects that are already underway, whether there's funding included in the adopted TIP, some where design is already underway, some are already under construction as we speak. So obviously these projects would not be needed to be added to the priority list because they're already underway. So those were those first two slides showing all these projects underway, which left us with those projects in the cost feasible plan that have not yet been identified for funding and are not under development. So we went through project by project, and so these I wanted to focus on and run through the recommended selection of Okeechobee. So the first is a new Tri-Rail station in West Palm Beach that would serve Palm Beach International Airport. The reason for this year we're not recommending inclusion on the priority list is there's already a feasibility study funded that will be kicking off next year. So didn't want to kind of get the cart before the horse. And once that feasibility study is done, if it's recommended that that is a good location, that would be the time then, and that could be a good candidate for next year's priority list. The second is similar to how I mentioned for US-1 and Okeechobee, the corridor studies. Military Trail is identified as one of those corridors. The reason we didn't recommend inclusion this cycle is because we already have two parallel north-south transit corridors prioritized. US-1 is underway, and then we also have on our priority list currently the Tri-Rail extension north to Jupiter. So we thought there's only so many corridor studies at a time, so we thought it would be good to tie in an east-west corridor at this time. It also ties in well with the City of West Palm Beach's mobility plan and focus on Okeechobee Corridor, so that would obviously be a component. It would not be done in a vacuum, obviously. Third project was the US 27 Connector Road out in the Glades. Today there's no traffic needs that would warrant this. It's really tied to the potential for an inland logistics center or inland port in the Glades. And that there had been discussions, but that's been on hold for a while, so until that starts moving, that roadway would not be needed at this time. The next project was a park and ride expansion at the Boca Raton Tri-Rail Station near Yamato Road. Right now the priority in that region is for the second Boca Raton Tri-Rail Station, which is on the priority list, so this wasn't deemed to be an imminent priority. Next one was Express Bus on I-95. From West Palm Beach to Jupiter. And again, this goes back to the parallel north-south discussion. We already have the Tri-Rail extension to Jupiter, and there was a lengthy discussion on that project yesterday at the TAC meeting. So we didn't deem, you know, very close and parallel the express bus at this time. I already hit on Okeechobee with the connection to the mall at Wellington Green, which is project that we are recommending for inclusion. And then the last two were also out in the Glades regions, and the traffic, it wasn't warranted at this time for those last two improvements. So before I move on, I feel like this slide may draw some questions, so I just wanted to, yes?
You're correct, yeah, it does draw some questions. So. MPO staff suggestions, is that Is that coming from Nick's office?
Yeah, that's coming from, right, us MPO staff. When we went through the list of candidate projects, which ones we felt were ready for pulling onto the priority list, yes.
Okay, so the Yamato Road Tri-Rail Station park and ride expansion.
Mm-hmm.
So there's very few options for park and ride at that location.
Mm-hmm.
And the justification you have up there is that the construction of the second Tri-Rail Station.
Mm-hmm.
The Yamada Road, as you know, the Tri-Rail Station is the recorded as the highest volume of people boarding and unloading on at that station. The same is going to be true for the second station, that the...
Near Glades?
Yeah, the parking facility is even worse at the future station.
Mm-hmm.
So the justification of saying that the second station is going to eliminate this conflict, I'm not sure that the city of Boca Raton would agree with that assessment.
Okay. And this is probably something I should have looked at. Do you know the current utilization rate? Is that park and ride, are the spaces being well utilized today?
There's a need for more.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unfortunately, there's a need. So to just remove it and justify it based on that a second station is coming to Boca Raton, we're appreciative that a second station is coming. But with the ridership numbers that are at that Tri-Rail station, it would seem to me that it would be more appropriate to really review that, since the second station's not going to have any off-street parking, basically, at that station available to... I mean, they're using a lot of shuttle services that are going to be help promoting that second Tri-Rail station. So just as a point of notation with your assessment, I'm not sure that the city would support. So my original question was MPO staff suggestion. I mean, if that's the consensus coming from the director, I think the city would be interested in having a conversation with the director regarding those suggestions.
And we can have and also schedule discussions with SFRTA to talk about any plans that they may have, none are not aware of any at this time. And I do want to clarify, none of these are being proposed to be removed from the cost feasible plan. These are just, if we were going to pull on to the annual priority list to try to get that into the next.
Well, you're not prioritizing it. So. I mean, you're...
Right, it's still prioritized in the LRTP. It's just not pulling it on to this priority list, correct.
And the military trail over to the West Palm Beach, I would disagree with your assessment on that as well. I think US 1 operates completely differently from a land use density scenario than military trail. I think an evaluation for multimodal corridor improvements on military trails is warranted, and the fact that you're using the justification that US 1 is really, it's not necessarily, I think there's a need for alternatives for north-south connections that are more centrally located within the county. So just from land use, density, employment sectors, things of that nature, it's, so just wanted to make those two statements.
Yeah, and I will say for the corridor studies, because there is a limited number that we can have going on at a time. I mean, the US 1 multimodal study underway now, it is a huge staff effort. So that's why in picking, we thought it'd be a good time to do an east-west corridor, and it ties in with efforts underway. So I think it would be tough to have two corridor studies underway at the same time, but I agree for next year. I mean, military, it's certainly not saying we don't think there's a need on it. It was just at this time.
Understood.
Any other questions?
I had a question.
Sure.
What is the inland port that's proposed?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I kind of just threw that term out. So there have been, I think the discussions were in high gear probably about 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what the proposal was is to build basically an inland port out in the Glades community that would provide additional storage, if you will, to support. With the Panama Canal expansion, there was an assessment that there would be a lot more freight coming into South Florida. Mm-hmm. And there's limited opportunities for expansion of how much cargo can be stored at the individual ports. So in other areas of the country, you'll see that there are areas away from the coastal ports that are used as an inland port. So they've been discussing of potential rail connections along the US 27 corridor so that rail can be used to then hold the freight in that area. Also potential roadway improvements to 27 to accommodate more trucks. But if that inland port were to happen, you'd see a significant increase in movement out there. Hence a lot of these projects out there, but without that, they're not justified at this time.
Okay, thank you.
The widening of the Panama Canal allowed boats to now get through, and instead of offloading in California, they're offloading in Miami, so they're displacing the current Miami ships who are moving to Fort Lauderdale, who displaced to move to Palm Beach. So we expect it to get much busier.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, then the next slide focused on the local initiatives. There were 8 applications that were submitted this cycle, 7 of which were deemed eligible, and based on the funding availability of approximately $17 million, all of the 7 projects that were deemed eligible are recommended for funding and inclusion in the priority list. So just to run through, that included 36th Street, roughly bicycle lanes in West Palm Beach, Lindell Boulevard, sidewalks and cycle track in Del Rey, improvements to Indian Town Road in Jupiter, Palm Tran bus shelters, 36th Street is also in West Palm, a bridge replacement and lighting, Barwick Road, sidewalks and cycle track in Delray Beach, and a ramp bridge connector, which would kind of connect a project from, I think, last cycle or 2 cycles ago to one proposed now to create a more continuous network. There were a couple projects, both in the local initiatives and transportation alternatives, where some additional outreach has been requested because of the context of the neighborhood where the projects will be, but we're still recommending inclusion on the priority list while that additional outreach occurs. Then for the transportation alternatives, there were 6 applications submitted. This had a smaller funding availability, so the funding was able to accommodate the top 4 ranked projects, 3 fully, and then the 4th, which is in Royal Palm Beach, would receive the remaining funds, which is the majority, and there's been conversation with Royal Palm to make sure they would still want to go forward and cover that difference in funding, and that is the case. So these are the 4 projects that are also included in your backup and record. Yes?
2 things. Local initiatives, which project was not eligible?
So for the local initiatives, there was a project submitted by the town of Palm Beach, and it involved, there were a couple components to the project. It was mast arm replacements and some ADA improvements at those same intersections where the mast arm replacements were.
Okay, and the THT, is it correct that the Delray had submitted an application for Linton, and they tried to get the county to give them maintenance or ownership of the bridge, and that didn't work out? And how did that affect everything that was ranked lower?
That I'm going to defer to Francesca
sure.
on that one.
Sure, so that is correct. So Delray did propose a project on the Boulevard, which is currently owned by the county. The city wanted to take ownership of that roadway. We did not receive that in writing from the county that they were okay with that change or that switch in time for our process, so we had to remove it from our ranking, which consequently moved everything up. So Delray was originally ranked 3rd, they were removed, and so our new 4th became North Palm, and then our new 3rd became North Palm, and then our 4th one rolled up, which was Royal Palm.
With that, okay. If there are any additional questions.
Any other questions for Kevin? Okay, would someone like to make a motion? Let's see, where do we have? A motion to recommend adoption for the annual list of priority projects.
So moved.
Second. Okay, and discussion items at all? Just before we go forward, I'd like to say the city of West Palm Beach doesn't support State Road 7, and because of that, we'll vote against this. Again, as we've said before, that you know, if you look at the numbers for funded and unfunded projects, we're pushing State Road 7 to the top of the list, but then the Tri-Rail Station,
is still down to number 8, and also now we're already funding other projects that are below it. And so that's kind of against us supporting State Road 7, plus now, you know, it's pulling back the Tri-Rail, the Coastal Link, and now we're funding other projects, so we'll be voting against it. Any other comments?
Unless I meant to say what we're talking about and supporting that this is proposed, unless there's an amendment that talks about the priorities.
Do you want to make an amendment?
I'd be happy to.
So you have a motion on the table to adopt the annual list of priorities list. Would you like to make an amendment to the motion?
An amendment to the motion to include the... You put up the screen with
sure.
The...
Heather, excuse me, if I could ask everyone to speak up but to make sure everything's captured on the audio recording
okay.
That we post to the website, please.
Okay, thank you, Lois. Thanks.
So, Kevin, just to clarify...
Sorry,
I had a question.
Yes.
Since we're having discussion.
Yes.
Before I make an amendment to the motion. The next fiscal year, just to clarify, the LRTP projects that you're going to add to the priority list, are we going to reprioritize those projects for the following fiscal year? The ones that are shown as do not prioritize?
So the ones that says do not prioritize, it basically wouldn't have any impact on those projects because they're already identified as cost-feasible projects.
They fall within the cost-feasible list.
Correct.
So,
so this is the process to then, basically you have to make that leap from, okay, we have the identified cost-feasible projects in the LRTP.
You have to
pull them into
sort of a priority of saying what can we do, right?
Right.
So, okay. I'm going to withdraw my motion to amend. At this time.
So we have a motion on the table to recommend approval for the annual list of priority projects. And second. Okay, any more discussions? Okay, let's take a vote. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
That's me and from both. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
And I'm sorry, I was remiss earlier. Kevin will be the new liaison to the BC Council.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we're moving on to action item 2B1. This is a motion to remove from the table the amendment to the long-range transportation plan to add improvements on I-95 and 45th. And we have Jeff Beasley and Robert Lopez.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. The first item is to remove it from the table.
Is that what it said?
Yeah,
remove it from the table?
An amendment?
Okay, yes.
So
B1, a motion to remove from the table.
So we need to make that motion to remove it and then.
Oh, they're going to discuss it with us first? Okay.
So moved.
Oh, okay.
Second.
B1.
Why do we want to remove it?
It's been tabled in order under Robert's rules in order to, when something is tabled, it's different than postponed. So when you table something,
you have to
untable it to bring
agenda.
It back to that active.
And I think you did this at the last meeting, but we needed to be on the agenda.
Right.
Is the new agenda
okay.
Is up front?
So,
yeah,
so we know then it comes back to
come back to discuss.
Yeah, so
right.
we have a first, we have a second.
Second.
All in favor?
Okay.
So item B2. So now we'll have a presentation on the LRT amendment for I-95 and 45th for a motion to recommend adoption of the LRTP.
Yes, we presented this to you all a few months ago, so I'll try to be a little bit brief and let you know pretty much what's changed since that time, but here to talk to you about the 95 45th Street project in West Palm Beach County. And you can kind of see here the study area that we're currently looking at. This is 45th Street and I-95. You can see the main municipalities and stakeholders that we're currently working with are Riviera Beach, Mandalay Park, West Palm Beach, and of course, Palm Beach County. The purpose of the study was to identify short-term and long-term needs within the study area and to develop design concepts that address traffic spillback on I-95. I'm sure you were probably aware. Remember a few years ago, there was a master plan developed for Palm Beach County studying the I-95 corridor within Palm Beach County, and identified multiple interchanges that needed improvements. I-95 45th Street was one of them, and it was identified for improvement primarily due to this reason right here. It was projected there's current and will be worse spillback, mainly from this northbound off-ramp onto the I-95 main line, and eventually this southbound will also develop the same problem. And that was pretty much the main trigger that resulted in a need for a PD&E study to develop some kind of major improvement for this interchange. Can go over really quick. This is kind of the existing conditions of I-95 45th Street. And you can see here the level of service at each intersection. Forward. And you can see doing nothing by 2040 results in what we call failing conditions at certain points, specifically this northbound turn, the intersection, this northbound off-ramp, and also the southbound off-ramp here, which would result in unacceptable conditions, which would also impact the I-95 main line. And likewise, the overall average is not failing at Congress at 45th, but it results in a level of service E with individual movements that do fail. You can see up here that it's somewhat deceiving, even though the overall is D, which is acceptable, there are individual movements highlighted above which do fail. And so this is a quick overview of the process we use to develop alternatives and to develop solutions for the PD&E. Basically, the evaluation process looks at one, no build. You know, what are the consequences of no build or no action, which we kind of saw in the previous slide, what we would project would happen if we do nothing. And we also look at TSMNO, what's the most improvement we could do with little to no impact and at a very low cost. And then we try to look at alternatives. What are alternatives that would actually fix the problem, and what are the impacts of each of those alternatives? And kind of something we also look at, which kind of should be on the side here, is possibly in case these alternatives don't work, we look at concepts that could be for future PD&E projects. And that's something that we also did consider as part of this project. And give you a quick overview of that TSMNO, kind of the minor impact alternative. It won't fix the conditions up to year 2040, but it would make an improvement with a very minor impact. And what we identified as a TSMNO is basically widening these two off-ramps, where we said kind of the problem was the source of the problem, to triple rights, triple lefts, and triple lefts, triple rights. And likewise, we saw Congress also had some conditions that needed improvement. It would also include widening Congress to a triple left turn at the turn 9 right here. Also, other things that kind of aren't shown here, but would also be part of it, is developing improved signal system and travel information system and improved signage for both the northbound and on northbound off-ramp to Congress. And you can see here kind of what improvement you get from the TSMNO. You know, if you kind of remember back to the previous slide of the no bill, you do see a lot fewer movements highlighted here. So it makes quite a bit of improvement, especially you can see the southbound off-ramp is operating at acceptable condition. And you can see the northbound off-ramp, that the actual off-ramp movement is now an acceptable movement, although the through traffic might experience a delay due to that. And then looking at the build alternatives to try to find a solution that would take us all the way up to 2040. If we moved too far here. Okay, the first alternative is kind of a conventional alternative. It would entail, you know, the TSMNO improvements of widening the off-ramps. Sorry, mentioning trigger finger there. It would include widening the off-ramps and, in addition, widening the full main line here, adding an additional through lane. Because as you kind of recall from the TSMNO, you saw that this through movement is what was failing. So a build alternative to alleviate that would then involve widening the full main line here, which would also include widening the canal bridge right here. And since we'd be doing that widening, we would also be able to address achieving bicycle lanes throughout the entire project limits that we're building on, and both sidewalks and bicycle lanes throughout the full project limits. The second alternative that we looked at as a build alternative is what we call the diverging diamond. This one actually involves less pavement, less widening, but involves kind of realigning the roadway a little bit. And we can kind of explain that in a little bit more detail for you of how that works. But this also results in acceptable conditions both for the off-ramp turning movements and the through movements. Give you a little bit overview of how the diverging diamond works. You can kind of see highlighted how the movements take place. These off-ramp movements would be able to happen simultaneously. And obviously, while you have this through movement taking place here, kind of this through movement would be at a stop condition at these two intersections. And then vice versa would take place. You would then have this through movement taking place, and this through movement would be at a stop condition at those two intersections, which basically brings all your these two traffic signals down to two phases, eliminating the left turn phase and pretended right turn phases. So instead of adding more pavement area, you're basically giving more time, creating time, pavement for time instead. And again, you can see this kind of gives you an overview of how bicycles are accommodated. This is basically the route the bicycle lanes would take. They'd start out kind of where you expect at the keyhole between the right turn lane through movements, and then they would actually move, follow the same movement as the traffic. They'd move to the center here, and then move out to back to the other side, and likewise for the westbound movement. And this is basically showing you how pedestrians would be accommodated. And big benefit of the diverging diamond as opposed to like the traditional widening is the pedestrians only have three lanes to cross, and they really only have to be aware of traffic coming from one direction rather than two directions at a time. So it's actually, it might look like more of a zigzag taking place, but it's much easier for pedestrians to move through, and there's much easier for them to know, you know, like here, they only have to be aware of traffic coming from this direction. They don't have to be worried about the right turns and left turns taking place at the same time. Again, this kind of gives you an overview, as you can see with alternative one, the wide. Again, you see it does take care of all conditions. You don't see any movements highlighted. So it takes us all the way up to 24. And likewise with the diverging diamond, you see no movements highlighted, so there are no failing or unacceptable conditions. Here's a quick overview of the cost of each alternative. And as you can see, they're all fairly close together. Even the no impact, you know, is about $3.8 million, and then the widening and the diversion diamond get pretty close together, $8.9 million, $8.6 million. And the right of way is kind of where the difference is between alternative one and two and that TSM no alternative. There would still be some right of way impacts. Those alternatives, but fairly minor in terms of cost. Since it's here, I guess I'll go over it with you. I thought this was taken out, but I'll go over it with you. As I mentioned earlier, in addition to the build alternatives for the PD&E, one thing we try to take into account early on in the project is, you know, we sometimes come into the risk that we might not be able to solve the problems on this corridor within the, you know, the limits of the PD&E project. So what we sometimes try to do is we try to develop concepts as part of the PD&E for a future PD&E. And one of the ones that was kind of looked at that could possibly be a future project or a future PD&E is extension of Cumberland Drive to connect with Congress here. And we were trying to see, would that help 45th Street interchange here? And this kind of gives you a little overview of what impact it has to 45th Street. Basically, as you can see here, if you recall, the main objective of the 45th Street I-95 project were these two off-ramp movements. And you can see it helped a little bit, but not as much as we were hoping for right here with this off-ramp movement. It really didn't make much of a difference on the cis movements of everything east. You only see 5%. Where it seemed to make a little bit of a difference is this segment right here, where you get 15-16%. You know, if we had seen that 15-16% kind of throughout this area, there might have been a little bit better functionality to it in terms of the project objectives. In fact, we didn't see that. We kind of don't see this as being really contributing very well to this project's objectives. And likewise, as you saw in the previous slides, the two build alternatives we had, we feel we can solve the problem within the confines of the project limits. But this is just to give you a quick overview. This is one of many. There's other things we also considered in case our build alternatives didn't work. But this is kind of just to give you an idea that, you know, there are a lot of things that we need to consider as part of these PD. This is again kind of a quick overview of that Cumberland drive, where it would be, you know, it could cost, depending if you go over or under, it could cost anywhere from $65 million to $100 million. And there were, like I said, a lot of other alternatives we looked at too, which were high cost in case we couldn't do it within budget of overpasses at Congress, new interchanges, a lot of things like that. But as we saw from our build alternatives, once we found out we could probably fix the problem for under $10 million within the project limits, we kind of stopped a study of these concepts. But this is just giving an overview of what's taken place throughout the course of the PDB project. And to give you an overview, again, we don't do this behind closed doors. Everything we do, we try to maximize public involvement whenever possible. That's we had our kickoff meeting on September 13th to kind of make everyone aware that the project is taking place. We held agency briefings following that kickoff meeting with the agencies you see here. We then had an alternative public workshop March 28th, presenting those two build alternatives and kind of getting feedback if anybody saw impacts that we weren't aware of with those two alternatives and kind of which would be preferred. And other meetings we've been coordinating extensively with the city of West Palm Beach and Manigonia Park. And one of the outcomes of that was, part of an outcome with the initial city of West Palm Beach was ensuring that bicycle lanes are continuous throughout the project corridor. So I think, these are productive meetings where things do get accomplished. And part of Manigonia Park was resulting in what we have here of a 45th Street Corridor Summit. Some of you have probably been invited to that. This is a series of ongoing meetings. I think Manigonia Park was concerned that we're only looking at the project. There are other things that need to be taken into consideration for 45th Street beyond Grass's project. And so we created, there was the creation of this kind of a corridor summit to kind of discuss future needs and wants and concerns people have beyond the study areas that we're looking at. And so this has been kind of an interesting discussion we had originally. A lot of, people, a lot of agencies discussed complete streets, the complexity of achieving complete streets, both the mixed freight, pedestrian use of the corridor. So this is kind of becoming a good good forum for some of those concerns that are beyond the project limits. And we'll be moving to our public hearing November 2nd, where we'll identify exactly what the preferred alternative would be for this project. Here's kind of, again, going through that same schedule. You can see we discuss the public hearing in November. Following that will be what we call the location design concept acceptance, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which is basically kind of the full acceptance by all stakeholders of the project moving forward. And obviously, throughout that whole process is public involvement, and to a large degree, you can see the arrow continuing, because even after LDCA is approval of the concept, but there is still public involvement that takes place to refine that concept, some of the details of that concept, such as the exact width of bike lanes, the exact width of sidewalks. Some of those things will continuously be refined even after the concept is adopted. And with that, I think there's one more slide, if we can pull that up really quick.
If you keep going, it was
Wait. There we go. And with that, kind of the main reason kind of we're here is we're asking for an amendment to the LRTP to have I-95 45th Street project added to the Long Range Transportation Plan. This is our draft, the draft work program of the numbers that we're requesting being added in the current schedule. We're requesting to be adopted to incorporate the 95 45th Street infrastructure project within the cost feasible plan. With that, I guess any questions or
Yeah.
I'm sorry, could you go back to that, the alternative to the diverging diamond? I was just curious about the... Because you're saying that the costs for both the traditional widening as well as the divergent are similar.
Yeah.
$8 million plus. I just had a couple questions. Does either plan affect the elevated portion of I-95? Do you have to like restructure anything?
No. This is all underneath I-95.
Yes. Right.
These improvements can be done without touching the structure. That's why the cost kind of came down, is that we didn't have to touch this. This structure is what would add. Anytime you touch the main line of I-95, it significantly increases the cost.
And just, I know there's more, it's more green space, I guess it's more just grass area that you'll have there?
Yeah, like as you can see, you'll probably see more green space show up in especially these corners here, because we're kind of eliminating those left turn lanes and instead realigning the roadway to accommodate the left turn. So right now, you know, we're estimating grass, but there's opportunity for landscape, depending on how we can make that happen.
Right. So long term, landscaping maintenance versus, I guess, pavement maintenance is kind of a wash. I'm just curious.
In terms of the maintenance of the two, I guess I'm not familiar with. I would imagine pavement would cost less. But
yeah, this is just sitting there, so I just.
But I'm not an expert in that area.
And one last thing, I guess, just as an aside, as a pedestrian. If for some reason I was at the southwest corner and I want to get to the northwest corner.
Southwest
corner to get to north. I have to kind of go east and do
you
the
would cross
of
here,
6 years
go across here, and then cross here.
No, but if I want to go just straight north, I'd have to kind of go east and
cross
bit
here,
and come back.
And
okay.
Then cross here.
All right. It just seems like a long way around the bar.
It seems long, but it actually feels more comfortable for pedestrians because this long way includes this open area where they don't have to think too much while they're walking, as opposed to, you know, imagine crossing this. This is, I mean, I know I have to cross roads, and you know, you got to really be look out for yourself when you're crossing something like this. Even though this might be shorter total, it's you gotta think about it, what you're doing when you're crossing this a little bit more. Where this is a much easier, there's much less to think about for a pedestrian.
I mean, that's kind of like the more intriguing design. I would like to see that just because I haven't seen that anywhere.
Me too.
So but if it kind of resolves traffic and kind of, you know, if the impacts are similar to me, I think I like that one, but you know, I know that's not germane to that, but that one appeals to me more.
Design alternatives take in consideration automated cars? Does that have any impact?
I don't think we've looked at automated cars at this point. That's something that I see continues to be an item that gets brought up in discussion, actually. And I think, you know, there obviously will be a point when that will be incorporated into our models, but I don't think it's currently incorporated.
I mean, nothing that's involved with that precludes automated equipment.
I think we asked this question before, but is there a diverging diamond intersection anywhere in South Florida that we could look at?
There's one in right at the Sarasota Manatee County line on I-75. It's right by where my parents live. They just opened that up, so I drove through it. My parents were very skeptical of what it would be like driving through, and they were like, wow, they definitely saw more efficiency with that roadway. And you don't feel like you're driving on the wrong side of the road
And for anyone that travels to Asheville, North Carolina, right outside the airport, they've got it. Pay attention. I actually did a video the last time I was there and drove through, but somehow I had a problem downloading the video in a format that I could share, so I'll work on that. The only thing for me is it's a little freaky when you're at nighttime. I've driven day and night. And when you're stopped and your headlights, it's like you're lined up with somebody directly opposite you. Visually, it's a little intimidating. You know, once you start moving, you're both going to turn. But it's a little intimidating at that point. But
Which intersection did you say that was?
Near the airport.
No, the one in Sarasota.
University Parkway, which is the the roadway that divides Sarasota and Manatee counties. So about 45 miles south of Tampa.
Okay, it's University Drive exit?
Yes, University Drive exit with
I-75.
Okay,
thank you.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
In your analysis, just remind me again, what's the design speed on 45th?
50?
Oh, 45.
It's 45, yeah. For the diverging diamond, we use, it's currently 45 on the west side and 40 on the east side. And with the diverging diamond, we would be applying 40 design speed.
And what's the percentage of truck traffic in your ADT that you have there?
During the peak hours, 6%.
Six?
Off, sometimes during the off peaks. The peak hour of the truck traffic to and from the port happens 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2 to 3. But the truck traffic with the triple rights, I mean, that's the one thing we're doing to improve the truck flow, is the triple lights off the exit. And then the signing to get them over in the left lane, so because they're turning at Congress. Even though the port signs cargo traffic to go through at Congress, they all turn at Congress. And then that extra turn lane at Congress gives them that extra capacity to make that movement to keep that traffic from backing up between Cookway and Congress.
So I'm concerned about bike and pet safety. And with a 45 mile an hour design speed and with some truck traffic coming through, all I really heard about was bike lanes. I didn't hear about designated bike lanes or buffered bike lanes. I just want to be clear on what is being proposed.
I think we do have enough space to accommodate 6.5 foot.
Yeah, this,
so 6.5 foot with curb and gutter would be buffered bike lanes.
With a separator?
Not a separator, with a buffer with an 18-inch double stripe.
You extend the length of the bike lanes on this too, with you?
Yes, that both alternatives will take the bike lanes across the bridge, so it will be continuous through the limits of the project.
And including the bridge?
Including the bridge. I'm not sure if we could get 6.5 on the bridge, or we, by doing the wide, with the widening.
Well, the bridge is a flat slab bridge that has 4 foot panels. So we can widen one panel on each side, minimize the impacts, and we can fit a 4 foot bike lane. If we go higher, we gotta go 8 feet on both sides. So it comes down to optimizing construction impacts, because every time we widen more, we gotta put more piers in the water, we got cranes, we got vibrations. So we're trying to minimize the impacts and optimize.
So it might add, if we could probably fit 4 foot for that, like 8.5 million, if ultimately an additional, 6.5 foot is wanted on the bridge, probably an extra, it would probably be another $1 million, or probably less than that, because you're already probably about another million, so it might push them both to a little over $9 million.
And you're asking for roughly about $100 million on this project, right?
That's what the current LRTP, that's what the current amount. And the reason that it was like that is because of what we spoke about before of additional concepts. When this project was initiated, an initial estimate was about $20 million, and that $20 million included basically something similar to this, widening all of this, and likewise widening this, and widening all of Congress kind of up in hand. There's another road that North Point, or Village Boulevard, widening all of that, and that kind of came out to $20 million, but like I said earlier, we weren't confident if that would be sufficient, and we held what was called a risk workshop, and from that we determined, if that's not sufficient, we would have to do other things beyond the project limits, such as that Cumberland extension we told you about, or possibly an off-ramp from I-95 onto Congress, or some other interchange improvements, north or south. And it was kind of estimated the risk of that could be close to $60 million. And that's why The original estimate for the project included about $20 million for the cost of, you know, the project, and a $60 million risk in case we were not able to meet the design year target with our current project. We now feel comfortable we can meet the design target within the project limits. So during our next update cycle, that risk will go away. And but that's currently in the work program based on our previous estimate.
So with that risk associated, there would be money to expand the bridge to make it so that it's buffered all the way through?
I don't know if the money, it's an estimate, so that's kind of all depends on the adopted, and I think the money is even outside the five-year work program at this moment, and so I'm actually I'm not sure at that stage if it's really money or...
Can you go back to the cost estimates for the regular no pavement and alternative one and two? So say we go with the green one, was that green? Yeah.
The diverging diamond was alternative two.
So even if you add $2 million, you're at $15 million, but when you're asking for $80 million.
Yeah. Well, we're just asking to adopt the long range trip, to move this project into the long range trip transportation plan, and have it adopted.
Can you go back to the last slide of the budget? Oh, is that the $13 million not all in? Is that the deal? Is it that includes right away, or that's just construction?
The $13 million?
Yeah.
The cost of the project is option two?
That's everything. That's right away.
Well, the current estimates, there was like 14 million. I think we're in the process of updating it.
It was 18.7.
Yeah, when you add everything to it, it's currently estimated 18 million, and we anticipate it continuously coming down. So you'll probably see next year this number will change to like the total of all this will change like 18 million, and each year you'll probably see that coming down, maybe eventually going up a little bit and coming down again. But
so what the city of West Palm Beach would like would be that Cumberland reliever still studied in this and not be unassociated with the project and still associated with the project. And we understand that, and we appreciate that you have done that study and that analysis. But we do think that it's also attached to Palm Beach Lakes Boulevard. And that'll come in separately later on, and you can again come in and say, oh, there's only 15% change in that area too. But when you start adding them together and start thinking about good practices, that's a dispersion piece that should be attached to this and should be studied now. And then that can be transferred into the 2045 if need be, but it should be part of the study process.
We are including Palm Beach Lakes into the study. And we kind of went through the model, and we'll have the numbers for you. We saw the reason it was left out is because the impact was so negligible that the program kind of expands the bubble of the data you download to what had an impact. So whatever didn't have an impact wasn't included, or a negligible impact that it's difficult to say if this will make any difference.
So
because the model might tell you one thing, but then ultimately you got like a five, you know, it might not in real life. The ones that you see up there that have greater than 5%, you know, it probably won't be those exact numbers, but you know it will have an impact. So the Palm Beach Lakes, the model probably shows like 3%. When it's at 3%, you know, we don't say with confidence in real life it's really going to have an impact. That's not something you can invest in with confidence. You know, that's a big risk to invest money into when you see less than 5%.
The board is supposed to evaluate this according to bicycle and trailways. It seems like we're getting off point.
Mm-hmm.
So how does this tie into the models and how they affect bicycles and trailways? And why are we discussing commerce?
Question was asked.
I know that, so I'm trying to bring us back in so we can go on.
So definitely, I think it's just a matter of
having this project and the expansion of bicycle pedestrians is great, but then also associated with this project is Cumberland, and that is expanding our network of bicycle pedestrian facilities in possibly areas that are more comfortable. So part of that, there was two options. There was one over 95, but also one under 95, which would be a more comfortable facility for everyone. And having that connection, especially from a bicycle pedestrian standpoint, where everyone doesn't have to go up onto 45th to cross over the interchange to come back down, would be way better for them to be on Cumberland and just be able to cross over in that area. The problem with that is that 95 is like a barrier, and lots of people either have to go north of 45th or south of Palm Beach Lakes.
Sure.
So it's important for us from their perspective, getting people off 45th that affect their CIS, but also from the city of West Palm Beach and residents of the area to be able to comfortably go from one side to the other without having to go to Palm Beach Lakes and 45th.
Right. Well, it almost feels to me, though, that, I mean, when you look at their traffic studies, it shows that it's less than 15%, meaning that what impacts 95 is what the state cares about, and what impacts Cumberland is what West Palm Beach cares about. So it seems to me like this is more of a local issue than a state issue.
I think they're combined because they affect each other. And so we can all work in a bubble, but we're all here together to solve this now. And so this is the time to have that discussion.
Right. Well, I'm just concerned that we're trying to spend state money on a local issue when there's probably other issues that are important to the state. And so, again, I just want to raise back in and say, do we like the fact that they're doing some improvement on 45th? And isn't that what we're supposed to be voting on?
And the city...
And then let the MPO handle your issue.
The city completely recognizes that 45th is a need. And I think that just that one of the options as a reliever of 45th, because traffic does have to go up and around, again, to Palm Beach Lakes, that one of those options is raising I-95 so that there can be a cross connection underneath 95.
So I do want to reiterate the point that today we're bringing the amendment back up so that we can have it included in the LRTP. The public hearing for the project is scheduled for November 2nd of this year, so there is still time for us to kind of delve into the design. I think it's good to start having a preliminary high-level discussion about some of the connectivity and bike fit facilities, but just to kind of be judicious, I think we should, either approve or not the addition of the interchange, and then kind of seek further guidance about the design on a continual basis.
I'd make a motion to amend the long-range transportation plan to include the 45th Street interchange and ask that the engineers look at adding buffered bike lanes through the loop.
And ask engineers to look into buffered
bike lanes through the whole project. Buffered
protected.
Buffered or protected?
You can say that either.
Buffered, yeah. Or look at buffered or protected.
Okay.
And what is the size of the sidewalk?
I think we're needing at least 6 foot.
We need a second. We need
I'm sorry.
A second. Discussion?
Size of the sidewalk, the width?
Six foot
throughout.
And again, once we want to attach Cumberland so that like it gets a chance and so that they can start doing the studies and then we can start moving forward with that. This is the time to do it. I mean, and like you said, if Palm Beach Lakes doesn't come back, there's not, because it's negligible, then you're not going to get the chance. It's not saying that it has to happen right now, but it is something where you could get it moving right now so it could be part of PD&E as we move forward.
And, also remind everyone of this taking place, that 45th Street Corridor Summit is kind of an ongoing effort. And, that's kind of a good forum for things like the Cumberland, because it's about beyond this project. It's kind of trying to realize that there are, this project will not solve all the problems. And that's kind of what this forum was created for, to give everyone a chance to, for future 45th Street improvements to take place.
Any other discussion? Okay, we'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, all opposed? Okay, our next item.
Thank you, Robert.
So next we have a motion to recommend approval for updates to the bike trailways and pedestrian advisory committee bylaws. That'll be Fran.
Yes. And so this is just really a quick housekeeping item on our bylaws. Currently, FDOT does not occupy a seat formally on the BTFAC committee. And so we want to edit our bylaw so that we can make that request, or take that request through the formal process of bringing it to our board on their consent agenda, and then allowing FDOT to have a seat at our dais in a non-voting capacity.
I'm sorry, you said it in a non-voting capacity?
Correct. So they would serve as an advisory member to the board. Or is it the committee?
Recommend a motion for approval.
Second.
Any discussion?
Is there any other agencies missing? I mean, while we're adding this on, is there anyone else that should be a non-voting member that should be here?
Well, we have made some appeals to kind of other entities that represent, hand cyclists, for instance, and
what about the water districts?
Sure. I think that's a good comment as well.
That's where I was going. I mean, I know a lot of us are looking at trying to use shared facilities and adding bike lanes along the canals, if that's what you're talking about.
Exactly.
I don't know if they have them here or just... My opinion would be nice to have them here, even as a non-voting member, because it's becoming a key issue.
Yeah,
Lake
Drainage District, we have gotten sent somebody.
Yes.
She has an amazing...
So if that's what the committee is interested in, we have to make a motion to that effect. So not only adding FDOT, but adding, I'm suspecting Lake Worth Drainage District and possibly South
Florida
Water Management District, we would need a motion to that effect.
Can I ask a question? First is, oh,
sorry. I had a question too. So when FDOT was here previously for all the meetings, that was on a purely voluntary basis?
Effectively, yes.
Okay, because I thought they were here advisory anyways. I mean, they never voted. I mean, I didn't realize that this change to the bylaws had been made.
Well, we just want to kind of have our bylaws reflect the actions that we've been taking. They have been acting in the capacity of a non-voting member. We just want to make sure that what we put in our bylaws is actually what we are doing.
Okay, so it reflects what has been going on.
Exactly.
Forever.
Yeah.
And then do you need to take that back to us, or would you just take this forward with the amendment to the MPO?
We would take it back with the amendment to the MPO to add the other agencies.
Okay.
So we have the amended motion out there. Thank you.
Madam Chair, an amended motion to a recommendation for approval to include FDOT and the Lake Worth Drainage District, as well as South Florida Water Management District.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's fine. Okay, awesome. Great. Thank you. And then finally, I guess there were number three, was still a little bit of time. Sorry. Information items. Thank you, Jessica, Melissa, for updating. We are going to look at our public participation plan.
Good morning. I'm Melissa Booth, the Public Information Officer. I'm going to ask Jessica Jocelyn, our consultant with Kilsa Associates, to join us because their team has been assisting us with a complete rehaul of the public participation plan, we're now calling it, to be more consistent with the codes, previously called the public involvement plan. same type of document. The intent is to update it, make it more user-friendly, and there's not a regular schedule. We just need to do this every several years. And it's been since 2012, since we did a major update. And in the agenda that was sent to you, there was a link. That link takes you at any time to the latest draft. Currently, the draft up there is dated July 10th. We'll continue to make updates to that, so please keep going back. And any feedback would be appreciated sooner rather than later, because we're preparing as we go through the committee meetings and the governing board next week to incorporate any feedback, also anything we get from the agencies, before we put it out on the street and promote it for public involvement, public comments, which will start officially on August 4th. And there's a 45 day period for those public comments, and then eventually to come back to all of the committees and be adopted in September. So we'd appreciate if you take a look and provide comments as soon as you can. Jess?
So here's what the document looks like. So I don't know if you all have had a chance. I know other committees didn't see the link, so we do recommend you go in and look through it. It's about 20 pages long, and there's large font and graphics and stuff, so it's a quick read to get through. So we appreciate you looking through that. So Melissa said a bit of why we're updating it, since it's not required. And we found, I mentioned 20 pages, so the last one is about 50, and it was very heavy on text. So we wanted to make it just more user-friendly, more attractive, that someone would actually grab it and understand what we're trying to tell them in terms of who the MPO is, what functions we play, how they can get involved. So we did that through just trying to clarify through easier language to get through on layman's terms, making it much more visually graphic, as I was saying. And then another key piece of updating this, and it was actually something the Federal Highway Administration recommended, was to, in the document, reference people to the internet, so your website, which you've invested quite a bit of time in updating and making sure that's current. So that way, Melissa or whomever doesn't have to go into this document and update it every so often if a meeting changed or things like that. So we really push people to the website now through the document, which is great. And then FHWA, with the FAST Act, a few things have changed, nothing major, but we did do a sweep of the document to make sure we're up to code there, if you will, from their perspective. So the goal for public participation, just a reminder, this is your MPO's goal, so this is what guided us through the update. So implement and grow an effective public participation process that enables and encourages public awareness and input into the MPO's local and regional, as Nick was mentioning, that regional piece y'all are involved in, transportation planning and project prioritization process. So that's, again, what guided us. There were five objectives within that kind of major goal. MPO meetings, such as this, using the opportunity to really encourage folks to come to meetings and provide comments and learn and educate themselves in these. For public participation strategies, we're focused on using multiple strategies. You're aware of this. We do use the website. We use flyers, brochures, newsletters, social media now. It's becoming, of course, very active. And that's to ensure that we get throughout your entire county. The county is very large, so we want to make sure we're using as many tools as possible to reach all areas and all demographics. For MPO plans and documents, as Melissa was saying, for one example, we're having the 45-day period for folks to review this. Through this document, we wanted to make sure it's very clear that the documents are open for comment and that folks understand the time periods for those and how to go about commenting on them. Promote and ensure non-discrimination and equity. This is very important that we're providing access for minority and traditionally underrepresented communities in all the work we do. And then again, that regional public participation, ensuring that you guys are always having a seat at the table when interacting with Broward and Miami residents, and that the message is consistent and agreed upon by your specific board. The document purpose, there are three items here. The first one is probably the obvious one. This document is to help the public understand what you all do, the documents you prepare, and how they can get involved. But the second one is also very important. As you know, staff change throughout over time at the MPO, and you really want to make sure it's consistent and clear into how we engage the public. So that's what this document tries to do. And the last one is very important, that it outlines the objectives and targets to support the goals that I walk through, and that the MPO has a tracking program in place to ensure that all the things we're trying to do are being accomplished and amended over time if they're not effective. So there's also five sections of the document here. So introduction, it just talks about the MPO and the plan itself. Participants in transportation planning, so your committee is in there, so they know who's involved in the day-to-day decisions. A how-to guide for addressing the MPO. It's actually a really nice one-pager if you all ever need it. Like, what do you do in your committee? It's on here, which is great. The plans and programs are in there. Lots of great, easy to understand graphics. Again, one-pagers that you can share with your constituents. And then there's a couple tables of the objectives and strategies that are very easy to follow if you're ever curious of the different tools we're using. The process, another five stages. So we spoke with peer MPOs throughout the country. The good news is you're about at par with your peers in terms of engaging the public. And they too felt it's very important within the plan to have your objectives and strategies documented. They found that's kind of the meat of the plan that really helped them the most. And then we're right here in the draft public participation plan stage for July, seeking any feedback to move this to the board next week, and then go out for public review and comment in August, as Melissa stated. And then we're going to finalize this ideally in September, and then monitor over time to see if there's any new ways to effectively engage the public, make any adjustments and whatnot. So that's it. That's just the Cliff Notes version. And like we said, if you have the opportunity to read through it, if there are any other comments or thoughts, please reach out to Melissa and myself. And we do really strongly encourage those comments though before we go out to the public.
Summary points, information items B, summary points from the June 15th governing board meeting.
Sure, so just a quick note, at the last governing board meeting, there was, let me back up for a moment. There's been kind of continuous discussion about the MPO rebranding itself, and that may include creating a new logo and possibly even a new name. There was some initial discussion at the last governing board meeting that the MPO could change its name to the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency. So it's just kind of letting you all know that that conversation is going on. Okay.
Yes. Okay, thank you. And then item number four, administrative items, member comments. Anyone else have some comments? No? My only thing would be asking the question of following the submitted items as well is we had talked about adding other municipalities to the board, to the committee, thank you.
Yeah.
has there been any reach out regarding that?
Not currently, but I will put the bug in Kevin's ear and kind of make the note going forward that we solicit involvement.
I had some discussions about it, and I guess it was a matter of, in the past, maybe people were saying they're a part of it, but then not attending, so that's a big piece of the conversation too. But we want everyone to join, so please talk to your fellow friends, okay? And then administrative items, next meeting is September 7th, so there's no August meeting. It'll be a month off, nice. And then a motion to adjourn.
Second.
And then don't forget, parents, does have a presentation if you guys want.
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
okay.
Great.
I thought it goes.
I thought it was switching.
So I'm trying to.